Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Hiri Bharadhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Hiri Bharadhari. Jana Jaja Jana Ranjana Jashodanandana Raja Jana Ranjana Jashodanandana Raja Jana Ranjana Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Jaya
Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribhraja Kacharya Stotra Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada ki Jai. Adanta Koti Vaishnavrinda ki Jai. Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur ki Jai. Prem Sakaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopinath Sham kun radha kunigiri govardhan ki jai. Vrindavan tham ki jai. Navadip tham ki jai. Jagannath puri ki jai. Gangamayi ki jai. Jamanamayi ki jai. Tulsi devi ki jai. Bhakti devi ki jai. Samaveda bhakta vrinda ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Go premanande hariro. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Sri
Chaitanya
Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya
Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya
Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. We're continuing Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Hansalila Chapter 20, Text 52, and we're doing a cell phone check. All cell phones silent, please. Hands reaching for the cell phones. Very good. Nagani apanashduk shabe vanchi tarshuk tarshuka amar tatparja more jari diaduk tar velo mahashuk she dukkha mor shuka barja. I do not mind my personal distress. I only wish for the happiness of Krishna. For his happiness is the goal of my life. However, if he feels great happiness in giving me distress, that distress is the best of my happiness. Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that a devotee does not care about his own happiness and distress. He is simply interested in seeing that Krishna is happy. And for that purpose, he engages in various activities. A pure devotee has no way of sensing happiness except by seeing that Krishna is happy in every respect. If Krishna becomes happy by giving him distress, such a devotee accepts that unhappiness as the greatest of all happiness. Those who are materialistic, however, who are very proud of material wealth and have no spiritual knowledge, like the Prakriti Sahajyas, regard their own happiness as the aim of life. Some of them aspire to enjoy themselves by sharing the happiness of Krishna. This is the mentality of fruitive workers who want to enjoy sense gratification by making a show of service to Krishna. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Miditam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kata Mahyam Tathati Shapanam Tikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamanam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Sha Shri Rupam Shagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Stam Sajivam Shadvaitam Shavadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Shahagana Nadita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha
Hare Krishna, Karuna Sindho, Dinabandho Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute, Tapta Kam Shanagaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu Sute Devi, Anumami Hori Priye. Vansha ko pitirubhyascha kripa sindho pyayevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vashadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Kaviraj Goswami is continuing to gloss the last verse of the Shikshastaka. Ashishyava parivatam panastu maham darshanan marmatam kurotu va. Yata tata bhavadatatu lampato mat prananatastu sevanampana. The devotee is happy when Krishna is happy. The materialistic person, if he has some sense of God consciousness, has the idea that God is the one who can make him happy. And that's his goal. We can say he's a devotee or materialistic devotee, not a pure devotee. His idea is that God is meant, well, Prabhupada put it strongly, that they want to make God their order supplier. They'll come to the temple or the church with their requisition list and present it before the Lord. My dear Lord, I need this, I need this, I need this, I want this. As if God were Father Christmas. That's their approach. Their standard of God's greatness is that the more God makes them happy, the greater God is. There's even, now there's a prosperity gospel. You can find the prosperity gospel preachers whose message is that God doesn't want you to be poor. So if you pray to God and have a positive attitude, you'll get cash. And that's their idea of holiness. That's not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's standard. That's not his mood to get something from God. Hoitaki tvai. Bhavatad bhaktir hoitaki tvai. No motive. That's condemned in Bhagavatam as koitavatam. Dharmartha kama moksha. My dear Lord, give me some, let me follow religious principles so that I can get my economic needs met, so that I can enjoy sense gratification. And when I'm frustrated with sense gratification, please give me liberation, let me merge with you. That's not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood at all. The mood is extraordinary. Not only do I not want these things, but what I want is whatever will make you happy. Even if your happiness causes my unhappiness. If making me unhappy makes you happy, all right, then that's happy for me. The materialist, he wants sense gratification from God. And when God doesn't fulfill his demands, he's bitter. He's disappointed. He's let down. He's bitter. What kind of God is this who just tortures us? He doesn't accept he's being tortured for his own misdeeds. It's God's fault. You know, like the prisoners, typically in the prisons, the prisoners are complaining because the government is unfair. The government is unfair. Not I robbed the bank, but the government doesn't play by the rules. The government is, you know, caught me by unfair means. There's one of the most famous mobsters of all time in America, a gentleman named Al Capone, who ran all sorts of illegal rackets in the city of Chicago, bootleg liquor during Prohibition, and so many different things. Those were the days when people would wind up in the river with cement feet for having crossed the mob. And so really wicked things, gambling, eating, illicit sex, prostitution, intoxication. So finally the government caught him on some tax charge and put him in prison. And he was interviewed and he was bitter. Why was he in prison? All he ever tried to do was give the people of Chicago a good time. He was a good guy. It was the government that was just didn't understand, didn't get it. Here I was just trying to give the people of Chicago a good time and the government chasing me down. The conditioned souls have a similar mentality. If there's God, then why is there this? If there's God, why is there that? Is it God or is it you? You know, if the government is so good, why are there prisons? Because of you, Baba, not because of the government. You act in such a way as to break the laws of God. You act in such a way as to misuse the human form of life. You turn away from God, your relationship with God. You step outside of your constitutional position into an unconstitutional one and try to be something you're not. And then you complain that God is nasty, or God is, what kind of God? God is perverse. What kind of God is this who does that? Or you say there must be no God. We blame anyone but ourselves. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood is the opposite. He accepts that I'm your servant. And I've fallen into this material world by forgetting you. Somehow or other I've forgotten you. And therefore I've fallen into this material world. Not because you're perverse. Because I forgot you. Therefore I'm suffering in this ocean of birth and death. In the modern age, anything that happens to us, we sue somebody. Especially in America, Britain's a little more civilized. But in America, you know, if anything happens, it's somebody's fault. If you slip on the pavement, then it's the city's fault. Because the pavement should have been, had a stronger grip to it. If you, there was some case, there was an automobile accident and the helicopter rushed in and rescued the victims, brought them to the nearest hospital. That hospital couldn't help the guy, so they immediately rushed him to the second hospital. The guy died, I think, and the family sued the helicopter company for bringing him to the wrong hospital. You know, so everything's somebody's fault. It all, the blame has to be fixed somewhere else. And so finally, everything is God's fault. But no. The laws of nature are there. We follow Krishna's direction. Krishna says, perform sacrifice, be happy. I'm providing everything. Tena chak tena punjita, take as much as your quota allows. Madhvataka shisvidhanam, don't take more. Well, a little more. Only a few billion dollars more. And then we're bitter. Why is there suffering in the world? If somebody gets away with it, some billion-pound scheme, then we say, oh, there must be no God because he got away with it. And if someone's suffering for no apparent cause, we say this person's suffering for no reason. And it doesn't dawn on us that he's the guy who in his previous life stole those billions of dollars from all those innocent people, and now he's suffering. We don't see the whole picture. We see our little corner of the picture and we say, oh, it's so unfair. There must be no God. Or God, what kind of God is this who would be so perverse, so vicious? So we bring it upon ourselves. And the materialistic person, because of his impious activities, everything's God's fault or there's no God. And the devotee, because of his devotional service, sees that everything is Krishna's mercy. That whatever comes, that's Krishna's mercy. Rancho Prabhu was telling me that he met a very senior devotee from Britain, Vijayavirya Prabhu, who's got, is it cancer? Some very serious disease. And he's paralyzed up to his neck. And Rancho, you know, went to meet him after many years and sort of didn't know, you know, could be what it would be like, what his mood would be. But he said that Vijayavirya Prabhu was just you know, grateful to Krishna for all the blessings that Krishna had given to him. He was completely accepting that, yeah, actually, whatever Krishna does is for my good. Whatever Krishna does is for my good. It'd be very possible under such circumstances. What kind, you know, I served Krishna for so many years, and I did this, and I did that, and why, you know, Prabhupada said, chant Hare Krishna and be happy, and what kind of happiness is this? Entirely, you can envision under the circumstances how a person would have that sort of mentality. No. Grateful. Krishna is very kind. Everything's for my benefit, my good. That's the difference between the devotee and non-devotee. There's one disciple of Radhanath Maharaj, right, he had before he passed away, a young fellow, newly married. His wife had just given birth to a baby girl. And he found out all of a sudden that he had cancer of the spine, I think it was. And, you know, like 6 months to live, a few months to live. And within a short while, he was practically completely paralyzed, confined to his bed. And I happened to be visiting Bhaktivedanta Hospital, so I went and saw him. And he was completely surrendered to whatever Krishna had done. No anxiety for what would happen in the future. Grateful to Krishna and his spiritual master for, again, the blessings he'd received, and genuinely blissful. I mean, you can tell when a person is like trying to be blissful, right? You've seen that. Genuinely absorbed in Krishna consciousness and happy. This is the effect of genuine Krishna consciousness. When a person is genuinely Krishna conscious, yasmin stito na dukkena guru napi vichalyate yam labdva chapram labha manyate nadikam tataha yasmin stito na dukkena guru napi vichalyate. In the Bhagavad Gita it said that by Krishna consciousness one perceives the presence of Krishna through his transcendental senses. Let's find that little. But I don't know where it is, actually. Not only that, but I think I didn't put my book in here. Probably not. Anyway, that's close enough. He perceives Krishna through transcendental senses. Yam labdva, having achieved that stage of Krishna consciousness. Cha aparam labha manyate na adhikam tata. He thinks, there's nothing better than this. There's nothing better than this. Not that, well, I'll make do with this unless someone makes me a better offer. Haridas Thakur. The prostitute came, young, beautiful, I can't live without you, you're so young, you're so handsome, you're such a great devotee, I'm burning up, please be merciful to me. No, there's no higher happiness than chanting Hare Krishna. Not, here's the opportunity that I never got. There's nothing better than chanting Hare Krishna. Old bag of bones prostitute. Nothing is better than this. Yasmin stitos, situated in this consciousness, nadukena gurunapi vichalite. Even the heaviest distress, guru means heavy, even the heaviest distress doesn't move him. He's not deviated, not set off track by any distress, however heavy. No, I'll serve Krishna. If Krishna gives me some distress, then that's Krishna's business. All right. There's some good purpose there. Then there are others, Prabhupada mentions here. Their idea is to enjoy themselves. And Krishna is an instrument for their enjoyment. Certainly the very materialistic devotees who are praying to Krishna for material things. And again, the Prakriti Sahajas who have the idea that they can enjoy sense gratification with Krishna. That's their idea. Their idea is not, let me serve however I may serve. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stitadhuli sadrisham dachintaya. Tavapada pankaja stitadhuli sadrisham dachintaya. Let me be a speck of dust at your lotus feet. Just let me serve you. And the Prakriti Sahajas, just let me be one of the gopis in Vrindavan. And embrace me and kiss me and blah, 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 blah. Because their idea is that it's sense gratification. Krishna will give me sense gratification. that's not the path chalked out by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or the Goswamis. It's not for our sense gratification. It's not that's not devotional service. That's trying to make Krishna, again, our order supplier. Not in the gross way that we're going to be, well, not in the gross way that we're going to, I want a new car, I want a new television. But in another gross way, I want you to satisfy my senses in Vrindavan, in the midst of all the gopis. I want you to satisfy my senses. That's not what Vrindavan is about. It's not for the devotees who've achieved the perfection of wishing Krishna to be their order supplier. The perfection of making Krishna their instrument for sense gratification. That's not Goloka Vrindavan. That's our extending our idea of the material world to the spiritual world. I failed to get sense gratification here. Let me get sense gratification there. But that's not pure devotional service. The goal is not sense gratification. The goal is Krishna's sense gratification, not my sense gratification. What is that? Krishnendriya Preeti Bancha Tare Premana. Adnendriya Preeti Bancha Tare Balikam. Yeah. To satisfy one's own senses is called kam, lust. And to satisfy Krishna's senses is called love. Krishnendriya Preeti Bancha. To want to satisfy Krishna's senses, not to want to satisfy my own senses. So that's the qualification of all the Brajvasis, the cowherd boys, the Nanda Yashoda, the gopis, Srimati Radha, everybody. Their goal is to please the senses of Krishna. Not that my senses should be pleased. The idea is there of some of heaven. The heaven is the place where your sense gratification will be achieved. No. That may be heaven. That's in the material world. But the spiritual world is the place where everyone wants to serve Krishna and please his senses. And my senses may or may not be pleased. Krishna, if my senses are pleased, that's all right. If they're not pleased, that's all right. Rather, as long as Krishna's senses are pleased, I'm pleased. And that's pure devotional service. Let's see. Need a little more. Jai Narire Vanche Krishna Tar Rupe Satrishna. Tare na pa hoy dukhi, mui tar pai pori, la yan hate tori, krida karuna tare karun sukhi. If Krishna, attracted by the beauty of some other woman, wants to enjoy with her but is unhappy because he cannot get her, I fall down at her feet, catch her hand, and bring her to Krishna to engage her for his happiness. Kanta Krishne Kore Rosh Krishna Pai Santosh Shukha Pai Tanada Parchane Yata Yogya Kore Man Krishna Tate Shukha Pan Chare Man Alpa Shadhane. When a beloved gopi shows symptoms of anger toward Krishna, Krishna is very satisfied. Indeed, he's pleased when chastised by such a gopi. She shows her pride suitably, and Krishna enjoys that attitude. Then she gives up her pride with a little endeavor. She nari jie kene Krishna marma vyata jani tabu Krishna kore gada rosh nijashuke manikaj paduka tar shirevaj Krishna matra chahiye santosh. Why does a woman continue to live who knows that Krishna's heart is unhappy but who still shows her deep anger toward him? She is interested in her own happiness. I condemn such a woman to be struck on the head with a thunderbolt, for we simply want the happiness of Krishna. Purport. A devotee who is satisfied only with his own sense gratification certainly falls down from the service of Krishna. Being attracted by material happiness, he later joins the Prakriti Sahajyas, who are considered to be non-devotees. Prakriti means a cheap materialistic devotee. Jai gopi mora kore dveshe, Krishna kore santoshe, Krishna jare kore abhilash, mui tar kore jan, tare sevon dasi ha, tabe mor shukher ulas. If a gopi envious of me satisfies Krishna, and Krishna desires her, I shall not hesitate to go to her house and become her maidservant, for then my happiness will be awakened. Pushti viprer ramani, pati vrata shiromani, pati lagi koila veshar sheva, stambila suryer gati jiaila mritapati, tushta koila mukya tindeva. The wife of a Brahmin suffering from leprosy manifested herself as the topmost of all chaste women by serving a prostitute to satisfy her husband. She thus stopped the movement of the sun, brought her dead husband back to life, and satisfied the three principal demigods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar. Purport. The Aditya Puran, Markandeya Puran, and Padma Puran tells about a Brahmana who is suffering from leprosy but had a very chaste and faithful wife. He desired to enjoy the company of a prostitute, and therefore his wife went to her and became her maidservant, just to draw her attention for his service. When the prostitute agreed to associate with him, the wife brought her leprotic husband. When that leper, the sinful son of a Brahmin, saw the chastity of his wife, he finally abandoned his sinful intentions. While coming home, however, he touched the body of Markandeya Rishi, who thus cursed him to die at sunrise. Because of her chastity, the woman was very powerful. Therefore, when she heard about the curse, she vowed to stop the sunrise. Because of her strong determination to serve her husband, the three deities, namely Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, were very happy, and they gave her the benediction that her husband would be cured and brought back to life. This example is given herein to emphasize that a devotee should engage himself exclusively for the satisfaction of Krishna, without personal motives. That will make his life successful. Any questions?
What's to be said of, you know, because of the
a little louder, please.
In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord, when it talks about the four different people serving to, and in the narration to that section, Srila Prabhupada does mention that these personalities are considered great souls because there's an exchange of affection between the lords. But, so what's their position, although materialistic, there's some affection there?
They're beginners. They're neophytes, these Chatur Vidava Jante Imam Sukritin Arjun. They're pious. those who refuse to surrender to Krishna are duskriti. They're sinful. But these persons, artha, artarti, jagyasu, jnani, those in distress, those who are looking for material profit, the curious, those who are searching for knowledge, they're considered pious. But they're not on the platform of perfect devotion because they want something. They want something. Better, certainly better than the person who refuses to approach Krishna. Million times better. But they're not on the platform of pure devotional service, perfect devotional service. They're beginners.
Also, in the narration of Dhruva Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, again, he does mention there that if one is after material things, then it's better if he approaches the Lord.
Yeah. Akama, sarva kamo va moksha kamo da ti. Ti vrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushampana. Whether you want material things or you don't have any desires or you want to become one with the Lord, you want to serve the Lord, whatever, you should approach Krishna. But Dhruva Maharaj condemned himself. I was such a fool. I approached Krishna for the stupid kingdom. His own self-evaluation, self-assessment later. I was a fool. I approached the Supreme Person to get some paltry kingdom.
Is there a difference between those devotees and the practitioners and the other ones who think that the Lord should be their Lord to supply? Is there any some sort of difference?
Yeah, they're different species. Those who are after wealth, those who are after relief from distress, curious, philosophical, they're forthright. They want something. They're approaching the Lord. The Prakriti Sahajas are duplicitous because they say, I want to serve you. And they even, you know, want to enter into the advanced realms of devotional service, but it's for sense gratification. So it's aikantiki harir bhakti rupataya ivakopate. They don't follow the rules and regulations. They don't follow the process of devotional service. But they want Krishna to satisfy their senses under the plea of some. Or even they make their own arrangement for sense gratification and then try to make that devotional service. You know, they'll do their own Krishna gopi thing and they'll somehow or other turn that into it's actually Krishna consciousness. It's just debauchery under the cover of spirituality. So that's not very good.
So then
Dhruva Maharaj, he underwent strict tapasya. He came under the direction of Narad Muni, followed his direction strictly, and he achieved perfection. Prakriti Sahaja, what are all these rules and regulations? That's for the neophytes. The goal is Krishna Prem, and they'll jump into Krishna Prem without the qualifications. The real Prem is Indriya Prem. Indriya Priti. They want to satisfy, they love their senses, that's all. And Krishna is the suitable vehicle for their sense gratification. It's very wrong. Yes?
By definition, true love or true devotion is unconditional, absolute, and undifferentiated. But you see, even if a devotee is very pure. There is some expectation of reciprocation. Like you said, for instance, I want to be stepped in dust on your feet.
I'm sorry, I couldn't get your last. Doing things there, so I couldn't hear what you said last.
Sorry, can you hear me?
Last
sentence. Yes. So, in the case of a devotee, there is always some expectation of some reciprocation. Mm. Because even if you say that, as you said, that I want to be just a speck of dust on your feet or something like that, that is an expectation, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's the expectation. You can step on me, you can do some, whatever you like. If I'm the dust at your feet, you can step on me also. That's all right. Just I want to be connected with you as your servant. Not that I expect that you'll satisfy my desires for this, that. I want to be your servant. That much only. What kind of servant? That's up to you. The servant that you embrace, the servant that you slap, whatever you want.
So basically, it's the quality of the expectation.
Yeah, there's some expectation. This much, that I want to be Krishna's servant.
Right.
But not that, not conditional service. Not, I'll be your servant if you do this for me. I'll be your servant if you do that for me.
You see, this is very interesting because, I mean, in Christianity, for example, Christians, the God is God of love.
Mm.
But then, why does he create things like earthquakes, floods, pestilence, and so on? Mm. They can't sort of.
This is a serious problem in Judeo-Christian theology.
Excuse me? Sometimes part of they say, maybe God is dead.
Yeah, this is a serious theological problem in Judeo-Christian theology.
In Buddhism, for example, there is always this idea of karma. It's nothing to do with God. Actually, there is no God in Buddhism.
True.
But it's what you do is action and reaction.
Yeah, well,
now, what's the perspective from Vaishnavism?
Let's look at these two problems one after another, the Judeo-Christian problem and then the Buddhist problem, because they both have problems. The Judeo-Christian problem is what's known in the Judeo-Christian world as the problem of evil. And the project of justifying the ways of God given the evil of the world is what's called theodicy. It's a whole project called theodicy. The basic argument is that if God is all good and God is all powerful, how can there be evil in the world? And we see there's evil in the world. An innocent child is afflicted with whatever. Innocent in war, innocent children die. So how can there be God? Either he must not be all-powerful, he can't stop it, or he must not be all-good, he doesn't want to stop it. That's the problem of evil. From the Krishna conscious point of view, the so-called evil is not just visited upon an innocent being, but it's the result of previous impious activities. Practically, the problem of evil for the followers of the Vedic culture is not a problem. There's consequence. It's not unexpected, unwarranted evil, but it's punishment for previous transgressions. Okay, Judeo-Christian problem. Without karma, they go on and on trying to figure out how to justify what God's doing. Finally, well, the ways of the Lord are inconceivable.
So, yes, that's a very true story. You actually, if you look at the Old Testament, it's very much simplified there because the God is somewhat vindictive.
Well, that's another thing. The nature of God, he does a lot of smiting and that sort of thing. He's a rather unpleasant fellow in the Old Testament.
Torah, for example, the Jewish Bible, and that God is almost waiting to see if you're doing anything wrong that he doesn't like.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to bash.
No, it's not. I'm sorry, I'm not bashing at all. I'm just trying to find a reconciling point.
Well, if we want to get into a study of the Old Testament and everything that we don't like about it, we'll be here all day. But this serious problem is there in both the Old Testament and the New Testament. that people suffer inexplicably. Innocent people suffer inexplicably. Life is just manifestly unfair. That those who deserve to be rewarded are punished, those who deserve to be punished are rewarded. Life is just manifestly unfair. That is a serious problem, for which, God bless them, may they work on that problem and try to figure it out. It will be very difficult without reference to the law of karma. And as soon as the law of karma is brought in there, the problem of evil ceases to be the enormous problem that for them it is. As for the character of God in the Old Testament is rather peevish, or nature, or his being perpetually ready at the drop of a hat to visit pestilence and so on upon people. I don't want to comment about that. It's their, they have their own, on balance, God is also very merciful and very kind and so on to the people that he likes. And I think without taking the time to give a fair study to the book, it wouldn't be right for us just to sit here and say, these stupid people think this and these stupid people think that. But I think we're familiar enough with it to say that this issue of theodicy, this issue of the problem of evil, is a serious problem that's not addressed in their literature in a matter as satisfying as in the Vedic literature. I think that's a fair statement. Now, we come to the Buddhists, where there's no God, quite right, there's no God, but there's karma. The problem is, without God, why is there karma? There's this whole system, accepted, basically imported from Vedic literature, because Buddha, after all, is a Vedic prince. There's this whole idea that there's karma, that there's persistence, although it's a very different sort of karma, actually, from karma as conceived in the Vedic literature, because there's not only no God, there's no soul. In Buddhism, there's no God, and there's no soul. The sense of self, of a persistent eternal self, is illusory. There's a sort of, what would you say? Illusion of persistence, because one thing causes the next thing, causes the next thing, causes the next thing. And so it seems that there's one eternally existing being, that I'm a self that that perpetually exists, but that's an illusion. The self that exists right now causes the self that exists in the next moment, just as in a stream, the state of the water at one moment causes the state of the water at the next moment, causes the state of the water at the next moment. It's never the same stream, it's always changing. So there is no God. God is out of the question. And there's not even a soul or a permanently existing Atma or self. That's not there. We have now two problems. But there's karma. So that what I do now has an effect, 10 years later, if I shoot somebody now, I'll be captured by the police within 2 years and put in prison for the next 30 years. By the law of karma, if I smoke cigarettes now, I'll get lung cancer later. If I do, the more subtle kinds of karma also, if I do something in this life, I may suffer in the next life. Two problems. A, given that there's no God, where does this karma come from? Why is there this whole system? You know, if there's like a prison system or there's a any traffic system, it's because there's somebody putting the system in place. You know, we have a whole system of how many ever aartis a day and offerings a day and the curtains open and the curtains close and so many things happen because there's a system and there's people making sure that the system happens. Now they have this whole karma's very elaborate business and there's nobody in charge. It just is. How do you make sense out of that? That's their first problem. There's no God, but there's a system which would really require somebody like God to make it work. Problem A. Problem B, I only exist for the moment. There's no perpetual self. But the self that commits, I commit sinful activities in this life, and somebody else gets it in the next life. He's not exactly me because I ceased to exist. You know, moment by moment I cease to exist or I don't really exist. And yet there's this poor bloke over there who's suffering for the things that I did over here. That's a serious problem. So on those two grounds, we might also say that the Vedic understanding is more satisfying than the Buddhist explanation. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you. Just one appendix, so to speak. Is it some Western thinkers and writers, they claim that Buddhism is not really an offshoot of Vedic culture?
That there's some writers and thinkers who say that Buddhism is not an offshoot of Vedic culture. I think they would run into serious problems with scholars of Buddhist history. Lord Buddha is acknowledged by everyone.
I must say that these scholars are actually Germans, Americans, and so on.
German is, doesn't make you perfect. Germans have made a lot of mistakes in history. Americans have made a lot of mistakes, and who are British? They've got their share. As far as I've seen from every mainstream Buddhist history, including the Buddhist ones, you know, forgetting you know the Oxford scholars and those sort of people, the traditional Buddhist histories all agree that Buddha was a Hindu prince.
Yes, I think that is general understanding in all this
subcontinent. Yeah, everywhere, wherever there's Buddhism, everybody understands that Buddha was the son of a royal family in the state of Bihar in what's now India, and that the prevailing mode of thought was Buddhism.
But I had a lot of problems with my English colleagues here. They think it's the other way around.
Let them go let them go to this. There's a book, there's a series of books published by, I believe, Oxford University Press. They're small format books, about this big, and they have some sort of title that for all of them. I forget what it is, but it's
very short introduction.
Very short, thank you. Very short introduction to Hinduism, Buddhism, and so on. They're written by reputable scholars. We don't say that they're absolutely perfect, but they represent quite well what mainstream scholarly thought is on the particular subject under discussion. So let them go to the very short introduction to Buddhism, not the 800-page or, you know, 14-volume. Very short introduction to Buddhism and see which came first. It's just, you know, standing history on its head. It's something like saying, you know, first there was America and then there was Great Britain. You know, first we declared independence and then Britain took over North America. I mean, it just doesn't, it's very backwards. The Vedic literature is acknowledged by even the most skeptical and antagonistic authorities to go back many hundreds at least of years previous to Lord Buddha's birth. So it seems like either all of these scholars are very much mistaken, or the possibility exists that your friend might be mistaken. Yes.
You mentioned about things being unfair. When we argue, because mundane piety doesn't give devotional service, someone may be pious for many, many lifetimes and not attain Krishna. Hmm. But someone might be quite sinful and just by chance come in contact with a devotee and quickly go back to Godhead. That doesn't seem very fair as well. Who might criticize? No. If it's there, why should you die after to spend another million lives?
It seems unfair to you because you have some idea of the value of things, which is not Krishna's idea of the value of things. From your point of view, pious activities are very valuable. If someone plants trees by the side of the road, if someone gives a dollar to the poor, if someone performs some sort of pious activities, in your vision, that's an exceedingly great thing. He's a very good man. Not only that, but he's you know, he pats dogs on the head, and he loves his family, and he shows up for the Queen's birthday, and you know, he's what more could you ask? So they value all of these things very highly. But Krishna values devotional service very highly. For Krishna, a moment's devotional service is more valuable than all of your mundane pious activities. Just like the government. If someone risks his life for the country, or someone does something selflessly for the country, that counts more than I showed up for work faithfully every day. Krishna counts devotional service as exceedingly valuable. Therefore, Lord Ramchandra said, if someone just chants my name once, if he just says once that I'm yours, I accept it. You're a critic, you know. God is cruel, God is merciful, and God is merciless. And then if God shows mercy, he showed it to the wrong person. Who appointed you the critic? If he's independent, he gives mercy where he likes. He doesn't have to take into account your values. Oh, he was a patriot. He was a family man. He was generous. That's your idea of what's good. Krishna has his own idea. Now, whose idea is going to take precedence, yours or his? Yes.
Or should we just, you know, try to surrender to Krishna?
When there's suffering, how do we understand either the cause of suffering or the mentality that we hold that's brought the suffering on us, or is it necessary to do that? Yeah. We may try to understand as far as possible. We look within ourselves and we say, well, of course we look within ourselves and say, I'm a good guy, what did I ever do? Why should this happen to me? But if we're submissive, if we're devotional, then we say, what did I do? Why? What is it? Why is Krishna smashing me? What is he trying to tell me? Where did I blow it? That's natural. Devotee looks within himself and says, you know, Krishna is trying to correct me for something. What is it? And of course, there's always some deficiency within ourselves. If we've reached the stage where we can't find any deficiencies, we're really in problems. We'll always find something that's to our benefit. But we may also reach the conclusion that I don't know. I don't know why Krishna is smashing me. Objectively speaking, the guy down the hall is as bad as I am. I don't know that I don't see anything particularly evil and nasty that I did. But Krishna has chosen to put me in problems for some reason. I don't understand. And even that, we have, what can we do? We accept that Krishna has his reasons. We don't know. We may look, we may find even, we may say, I'm probably being smashed because I'm so stupid that I offended such and such devotee and now I'm getting it. Maybe we'll trace out something like that. Or maybe we can't trace it out. But we understand the principle that you get smashed because you deserve to get smashed. So I'm getting it because I have it coming. I don't even know why. Or I'm getting it because Krishna is purifying me. You know, if I don't get smashed, where's the advancement? If I just get an easy ride, then how am I going to get purified? So Krishna is giving me maybe less than I deserve. Tate nukampam susamikshamana. A devotee, when he's undergoing some difficulty, he accepts it. He accepts it. And it's all right, it's Krishna's mercy. Probably I had more coming and Krishna has reduced it to the minimum. So within his heart, he goes on offering his devotion and respect to Krishna, accepting. And in that way, he becomes eligible to go back to Godhead. Is that okay? Yes.
From the verse in Bhagavad Gita, where it's said that the rivers flow in the ocean, but the ocean remains still. So is it that the rivers flow, the desires flow independently? It's not that because we, they are independent, but the problem is that, I identify myself with those desires, and I say, now I need to fulfill them.
Yeah, that's good. Apuryamana machala pratishtam sumudrumapa pravishanti yadva tadvad kama yam pravishanti sarve sa shantim apnoti nakama kama. That because I have this body, some desires will come. So the Krishna conscious person tolerates that. Rivers flow down to the ocean, but the ocean doesn't go up and down, go wild. It remains steady. So many rivers are flowing, the ocean remains steady. So the sober person, Dhira, the Krishna conscious person, he remains peaceful, steady, undisturbed by so many desires, because he remains situated in the devotional service of Krishna. All right, some desire is there anyway. What does that have to do with my devotional service? He doesn't pursue it. Sa shantim apnoti, he attains peace. Nakama kami. Kama kami is a very interesting word. It means a person who's desiring to desire. He's incrementing his desires, as if this is a way for advancement, for happiness. Practical example. People are paying money to watch pornography. That means they're trying to increase their desires. or they're taking some medicine, some drug, to increase their sexual desire. They're desiring to desire. You know, doctor, I have a problem. What's the problem? I don't have enough desire. Yeah, that's people, that is their problem. You know, they do approach professionals with that. I just don't have desire. Maybe we'd have a celebration. But they're thinking it's a problem. Kama kami, they're desiring to increase their material desire. And so there's no end to it. You increase your desire, then you have to do more to satisfy your desire, and your desire is not going to be satisfied, so you're increasing, and then you're thinking, they're agitating their minds for sense gratification. That's how Prabhupada puts it, agitating the mind for sense gratification. Agitating the mind for sense gratification has no end. But the person who, all right, some desire has come, so what? It doesn't mean that I have to take it seriously. Does it mean that I have to take it seriously? Came, it'll go. Sa shantim, he becomes peaceful, he becomes happy. And okay?
So it means that those desires will always come from where we are here. They will always come.
Prabhupada said that as long as we have this material body, there'll be some desire. But that doesn't mean that we have to gratify those desires. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Maharaj, the specific types of desires we have, are they attached to the body, to our body? For example, one person may have a certain type of body.
Yeah, according to the body, there'll be different desires. The cat has one kind of desire, the dog has another kind of desire. The human beings, according to their bodies, have different kinds of desires. Someone wants to be a scholar, someone wants to be a track star, someone wants to be a rock star, someone wants to be something else. Women have their desires, men have their desires. The confused section have their desires. According to the body. Gross body and subtle body.
Mm-hmm. Just a question regarding Prabhupada from today and yesterday. The words sharing Krishna's happiness.
Sharing is, go ahead, your question.
Sorry, is that different from sharing the happiness of Krishna by giving someone, say, a book about Krishna?
Yeah, that's very different. To share Krishna's happiness with others, the happiness of Krishna consciousness with others, is appreciated by Krishna. Krishna says, no one's more dear to me than the person who shares that happiness with others. But the sense in which Prabhupada is using it here is that I serve Krishna to get a share. You know, I want my share of happiness, and that's why I'm serving. You're like a woman who marries a man for her share of the estate. That's not exactly love. But if she marries a philanthropist and the philanthropist is interested in distributing to others, he's got lots of money, more than he knows what to do with, and he wants to help people, and she helps in that philanthropic work, she helps distribute the capital, or find the worthy candidates, or organize the efforts, or whatever it is. And that service, that's appreciated. She's not trying to raid the estate for sense gratification. But her husband wants to distribute, she wants to help. That's appreciated. Okay. Last, Dushambar, what have you got?
Right, I would just make a little comment. The Mataji's question about very often we don't understand when we are suffering. And we are happy, we become happy. happy unless we don't mind to suffer, but we are more content if we understand why we are suffering. I was reading some time back, I think it's in the ninth canto, it's exactly the Srila Prabhupada in that purport. He also mentioned the verse that he quoted, that they have come by. And I distinctly remember this purport because I was in a suffering mood myself. I was being depressed. And accidentally I came across this purport, which was very nice. And Srila Prabhupada, he quoted that when suffering comes to a devotee, the devotee, instead to reject it, he embraces it. Where he's a karmi, he doesn't want it, he rejects it. And when we embrace suffering, that's the time when we understand, when the understanding comes also, why we are suffering. And then Prabhupada quoted the verse, the Tateva Kampang, that's why he came across this book. And also he said that Krishna, why the devotee embraces it? Because Krishna comes in the form of suffering. And it's, I forgot the name, but it's a Sanskrit name of Krishna that comes in the form of suffering and is embraced by the devotee. So I just wanted to call
it here. Material world, the materialists are always trying to reduce their suffering and increase their happiness, and they're getting the opposite result. But the Krishna conscious person is whatever Krishna sends. Asushiva padaratam panastuma madarshanam. Whatever Krishna says, he may send happiness, he may send suffering. It's Krishna sends happiness, that's nice, we appreciate. And if he sends suffering, then we accept it. And Krishna, whatever Krishna is sending. To give a rather crude example, Prabhupada tells about the stock market, where when the market is up, yeah, everybody's happy the market is up, and when the market is down, everybody's going, ah. But the smart person, when the market goes up, he sells and makes a profit. And when the market goes down, he buys cheap. So whether the market goes up or the market goes down, it's good. He doesn't get blown away while the market's gone down. Goes up, goes down, whichever way it goes, he's all right. So, of course, that's a very crude example, but the Krishna conscious person, if there's happiness, if there's joyful time, that's Krishna's mercy. And if there's difficulty, that's also Krishna's mercy. Therefore, Kunti's prayers are there. He's praying that when there was difficulty, then we had so much to depend on you. So we were always blessed by your presence. Now everything's all right. You're going away. Okay, I think we should stop here. Time has approached and, in fact, is upon us. All right, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Samaveta Bhakta Brindaki Jai Gaur Pranandi.
Are you going to take any breakfast today?
No, I'll just think about it in a second.